All right, welcome back to the first 2019 episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. Paul Danner Jr., your Bengals columnist, here with my man, Jason Williams, Politics Extra, the Politics Insider. Happy New Year, sir.
Happy New Year, Mr. PX.
Mr. PX to me.
It's still Mr. PX in 2019.
That is. I know. You're going to stand by.
Happy New Year, son.
Yeah. By the way, I how long are you allowed to tell someone Happy New Year?
That's funny. I was wondering that just the other day myself, because I wished someone a Happy New Year on Sunday.
That's okay.
And I was like, when is enough enough?
No. Once you hit double digits, like January 10th, don't. That's tell me Happy New Year.
Okay.
I'm done with it. But then I had other people tell me that you could get all January. You're going to tell me on January 24th you're going to be wishing me Happy New Year?
Yeah, no, we've already
had our holidays.
We're a 12th of the
but
year.
But Apple MLK Day, President's Day is right around the corner.
So we get two more days, well, the rest of today and tomorrow, to wish people Happy New Year, because the 10th is Thursday.
Yeah, get it in now. Get it in now.
So, Happy New Year, by the way.
Excited, though. Yeah, it's good to be back. Thanks to everybody for coming back to the TSC.
And Happy New Year to our listeners.
Of course. We're happy to have you back this year. Hope everybody enjoyed. Yeah, you know, if you want to go back, we had our Cincinnati-est moments of 2018 episode is still up. If you want to go back and listen to that, Sherry Coolidge came and gave us a gift.
Yes, she did. It was cool.
She gave us a pickle.
Tickle pickle.
She did. You left it here.
I left it hanging on the studio microphone.
I took it home and hung it on my tree.
Well, I left it hanging on the
microphone. Because I appreciated the gift, but you just basically discarded it.
It was because we talk about Tickle Pickle on the podcast. I thought it would be a nice thing to keep here in the studio, in the little box.
The booth. Which, by the way, Jason not beating up yet, but I anticipate that coming soon. Phil Diddy's here. He's producing for us. He gave us a light with a dimmer, which is really nice. Let me know if you want to bring the mood lighting down a little bit. I can do that for you.
Ooh. Too bad we're not on video.
No, let's get to a little bit of what we got coming today. So our guest for the interview segment is going to be Mike Murawski. He is on the Cincinnati Public Schools board. He has really done a lot. People might remember him from back in 2013, right around this time in 2013, he was an assistant principal at Purcell, and he had a blog post essentially that said he supported gay marriage, and the Archdiocese fired him. Well, after that happened, he kind of has really taken off in a lot of his projects that he had going on. He was able to really build up, and he's really become kind of a force behind the scenes in the city.
He has.
Or really not even behind the scenes anymore.
He's on the school board now, and he's always been kind of a, as I think we like to use the term, rabble-rouser.
We did call him rabble-rouser, yeah.
During the Storytellers thing a few years ago. But a guy who's just... sort of throws caution to the wind and says, you know what, I'm going to help people and I'm going to help kids and I'm going to go out there and do it. And he's doing it.
And a lot happening with CPS right now. So a really good look inside of everything that's happening inside of the local public school system. So be able to get into that during our interview segment. But first, let's kick it off here and talk a little bit about your predictions. You decided you were going to go and do some predictions for 2019. Mm-hmm. They centered around a few different things. One being that a bus levy would not happen this year, but would rather happen and get pushback to 2020. You had a thing about Joe Dieters thinking that he would announce that he's going to, or make it official, that he's going to run essentially for in 2020, but that would begin this year.
Campaign
would. And what else did you have? Oh, the stupid Gang of Five junk, which I'm sick of.
I think the text message scandal, which we've talked about on previous episodes quite a bit, so we're not going to rehash that. I don't think really any significant ramifications are going to come from it, that it'll ultimately be much ado about nothing.
I'm making a New Year's resolution that we never talk about that again.
Good for you. I don't make New Year's resolutions, so then therefore I don't have to hold myself to them. And so I might talk about it
again. You're not fun. You should try to be more fun. Maybe that should be your resolution.
Red rum.
So I, in particular for our opening segment here, though, want to talk about the first prediction that you made about the bus levy, because I think there's a lot out there. why does this matter? And just give me a quick background on the situation that, that the bus system is in and how it can, because it connects with the streetcar, because we can't go a minute without talking about the streetcar. Why is that?
excuse me. Let me set this up by saying there's a lot politically going on in 2019, even though there aren't very many elections and there aren't really any high profile elections going on around here other than in Northern Kentucky, where there's a the entire state of Kentucky is the governor's race, Matt Bevin's up for re-election. Other than that, though, in Southwest Ohio, there's certainly a lot of school board elections and little suburban community elections, but nothing hugely high profile like any countywide things or city hall or anything like that. In terms of, one of the things that we thought might be on the ballot in Hamilton County was a bus levy that could go on. It's still potentially, I guess, could go on the ballot this year. But one of my predictions was that it would not. And here's why. And you said the streetcar. There's a lot of challenges ahead right now for a campaign. And two things are that the city and SORTA need to divorce themselves on the streetcar. And here's the reason why. The critics of a transit levy or a bus levy are also streetcar critics, the anti-tax group Coast and some other, fiscal conservatives who, no matter what you say, you could put this in writing all you want, that a bus tax would not go toward the streetcar, but the critics of a levy would say, no, the same company or organization that runs the buses also runs a streetcar, so your tax money could go toward paying for the streetcar.
Right.
And so I talked to John Cranley last week. Now, he appoint a majority of the SORTA board members are his appointees. And he said they're just not going to be ready. He doesn't think they're going to be ready this year for a levy. And one of the reasons why is that they need to untangle this streetcar operations deal with SORTA and get that out from under SORTA and bring that under the city. So the city already owns the streetcar anyway. They can run it. The other thing he said was that they're trying to get legislation passed in the state house that would allow a transit tax or bus levy money to be used, not just for bus operations, but could also be used then for transportation projects like bridges, roads, fixing potholes, paving of roads, highways, whatever. And the piece there is that's what the suburbs will really kind of get out of a bus levy. Not a lot of suburban folks use the buses, but this could be the bone that you throw to the folks out in Delhi Township or Anderson or Harrison or Evendale, Forest Park, places like outside of the city, obviously, but are in Hamilton County, that this is what those places could get out of this. So the city residents, who mostly ride the, who are the folks, most of the people who ride the bus live in the city.
Yeah.
So the city would get improved bus system, improved funding on the bus system, and the suburbs would get improved funding on the bus system as well, but also could get new streets.
Something that they want. Yeah,
exactly.
And the interesting thing that I took from your conversation with the mayor was kind of the idea that you're going to get one swing at this, right?
Yes.
I mean, this is not something you're going to, you have to figure out what is just the right timing. And and basically when you're looking at, they would have to to get this on a ballot this year, they would have to summer? They'd have to have that in by this summer at some point?
Yeah, by the end of July, you'd have to have it on for the November election. And certainly they would not be ready for the primary in May at this point.
Yeah.
There's just too many complex things to work through. And then let's say you work through, you get that streetcar divorce all worked out, and you get the state legislation passed for the infrastructure piece. Then around that, you still have to build a campaign around it. And these campaigns for these countywide levies, especially... And here's the reason why this one's an extra challenge is because transit for so many years around here has been, really a four-letter word out in the suburbs that, that people don't think about the bus system, or they think it's just for poor people, or that what can I, you know, what do I get out of riding the bus? Like, they're just these things, these big clunky things that clog the streets. And so there are a lot of perceptions out there that you have to overcome in a campaign. And that requires getting a very diverse group of leaders and residents on board with. You've got to build a coalition of political leaders on both sides, business, nonprofit, churches, jobs programs, all these different folks who are in these different realms. You really need to get them all on board and behind this. And I think this is a good year to do that. And then you look into 2020 in a presidential year where turnout is going to be super high, particularly probably among Democrats who are really fired up to vote against Trump. Looking at all the trends in Hamilton County, it's been going blue, and you could say it's blue now. This could set up very nicely to pass maybe pretty easily in 2020.
Yeah. And the thing that I love, the idea of finding a way to make it work for everybody, and the idea okay, we'll fix it. We'll be better at fixing up all the roads and all that. But how much would something like this, let's say this levy, let's say they do pull this off, right? I mean, how much does that change things? Does that really fix things for the bus system? We spent a lot of time talking about it here, but like, would that be enough to really fix the vast majority of the problems, or is there still then steps 2, 3, 4,
it would be
that?
A big start toward addressing a really what's become an annual funding hand-wringing at the bus system. And the reason why is because our bus system gets a majority or half of its funding from the city's earnings tax. Now, when you look around the country, most of the thriving transit systems have some kind of a broader local tax that they draw from, a local sales tax, countywide type of sales tax thing. Here, it's currently approximately $100 million annual budget, operating budget, and $50 million, give or take, comes from the city earnings tax. Now, that's anybody, whether you live in Anderson Township and work in the city, you're paying for the bus system anyway. Now, the idea, that's another piece actually that we didn't mention is that, or I didn't mention this in the column, but the city also needs to introduce legislation that says the idea is that that earnings tax portion that goes toward the bus right now would roll off. Mm. And so if a sales tax, a sales tax increase is passed, the city earnings tax then would roll off of your paycheck.
All very interesting. We'll see how that plays out. And, it's something that they need to try to get fixed, but who knows if they'll even be able to get the whole streetcar divorce thing taken care of, that's complex, all of it. So that's the kind of stuff I really will be watching the preliminary stages of a 2020 potential end game.
Yes.
Or who knows? I mean, I guess there's a chance they could try to shove this thing through in 2019, but that seems highly unlikely.
Yeah, no, you're great point. The streetcar divorce is not easy. It's complex. A lot of legalities. It also involves, SORTA is contracted to run the streetcar, yet they also turned around and then hired a private company then to sort of run, the day-to-day.
Yeah.
And so they also have a contract, so how do you work through that as well? So there's a lot there.
Isn't it funny how before it went from, oh man, just everybody wanted to be connected with the streetcar at the polls, man. It was like that thing was just a voting machine. It got all the people out, and people were. And now it's kryptonite,
right? I this will get me in trouble with some of my my friends, but you could probably make the argument the streetcar is from a transit standpoint, public transportation standpoint, has set us back. It has just not been a success. It's not been, the ridership is terrible. And it's just not only that, but the rhetoric around it and the politics around it just make it a really tough thing to.
You can't sell any public transit now.
That's what I was going to get. The perception of transit in this area right now.
Everyone will think they're getting, even if you had a great idea, you think you're getting streetcar too. Right. I mean, that's how a lot of people would, the opponents would sell it. All right. Let's take a look. Really excited to have Mike Murawski with us. And you know why he's super strong? Because he taught at Moeller.
Oh, he did.
That makes him pretty awesome.
Great.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, let's bring in Mike Murawski, who's on the CPS board, amongst many other things.
All right, interview time here. I'm not to Cincinnati, and I'm excited about this one.
Me too.
Our guest, Mike Murawski, I'm just going to run down like the list of all the credentials and try to not to blush or be too embarrassed.
Okay.
Well, obviously, mostly you're on CPS Board of Education.
Yes.
You're the Partnership Policy Manager at Cradle Cincinnati. Sure. You do adjunct professor of rhetoric at Cincinnati State. Xavier, Notre Dame. You're on the board of Camp Joy. Most importantly, though, spent 10 years at Moeller High School, the best high school.
10 co-crusaders, right?
Yeah.
Young name title.
Anytime I can drop a Moeller, drop him in.
Young name title that we didn't list is that he is one of Cincinnati's forlorn experts on music.
Is that true?
That is accurate. That's accurate.
Are you here to talk about Richard Marx? Did he get you to come here to talk about Richard Marx?
I can.
We didn't talk about that off the air.
We always hope that we won't, but somehow we usually do.
I would classify MM, as I like to call him, as a, I would say you're a music snob, right?
I wouldn't say I'm a snob. I would just say I know more than most people.
I don't mean that derogatory.
I actually probably forgotten more than most people will ever know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I wouldn't say that's snobby. Just better.
So what is your take on the Cincinnati music scene then?
So the Cincinnati music scene, no hyperbole and no BS. Cincinnati has an awesome music scene, and it has for a long, long time. So I moved here 21 years ago from Atlanta, where I was kind of indoctrinated with south of the Mason-Dixon music, Nashville, things like that. And I love that kind of music, bluegrass, the old country music. But I'm a rock and roll guy at heart, and of course, Cleveland is where a lot of it started, Detroit. But Cincinnati always being like right in the middle with King Records and all the cool stuff that's going on there. It's really exciting to be a tangential part of that. My friend Elliot and Mayor Cranley's been really instrumental in bringing that back. Bootsy Collins, all these crazy people I never thought I'd be friends with. It's strange.
You're friends with Bootsy Collins?
Well, I mean, I was standing on a corner in Evanston talking to Jack White and Bootsy Collins about the history of King Records, and it hit me like, somebody's like, why the hell am I here?
Yeah.
But Cincinnati, sorry, all the way back to, you have like the very first place where you could cut a record live and sell the record in the same place at King. You have P-Funk, you have Bootsy here. The current music scene, I think, is actually really great. I play out at like coffee shop type places. I play in Lydia's a lot in Clifton. Arnold's every now and then downtown. I think we have a pretty cool music scene, and we've got a good like hard rock scene. We've got a good punk scene. There's some bluegrass around. The bluegrass was super cool back in the 90s when you were Moeller, Paul.
Correct. I was a big bluegrass guy back then.
Were you?
Yeah.
All right. There's some good Ray's Music Exchange in the late 90s, the Fish after parties that I was at reading the Bible usually, or studying up on my studies at 1 in the morning with the Fish heads.
Yeah.
But there's always been a robust music scene here, and I think it's very cool because you've got this weird melting pot in Cincinnati, right, where like all of these things come together.
Before we dive into some of the relevant topics of the day, I do want to kind of flash back a little bit because, you know, you've got this reputation as a rabble-rouser. Can I say that?
The Inquirer, actually.
Did we call you a rabble-rouser officially?
When my friend Katie Vogel lived here, yeah. That was Freudian. When Katie Vogel worked here and she hosted those storyteller events, myself, Jeff Birding, Commissioner Andrew Pappas, or Trustee Andrew Pappas, and Councilman Chris Seelbach were part of a rabble-rouser event at the Art Museum. So, yes, that's fair.
Yeah, you've been called. So I kind of want to revisit something that made you nationally famous. Can we talk about when you got fired?
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, this is a crazy scenario. And I don't know, people may not connect the dots that way. When you were at Purcell, you were assistant principal, correct?
That's right.
And you had a post essentially supporting gay marriage.
Yep.
And Purcell was saying this is not what we stand by and yada yada yada. They end up firing you, and next thing you know, it becomes national news.
Yeah.
What is that like to see your job situation end up on ABC News?
It was certainly surreal, and just And I always try to clear this up because Purcell and Moeller were awesome places. They supported me. Moeller especially embraced my differences. I wasn't exactly the most traditional teacher when I started working at 23. I had a very different style. And Moeller really gave me space to like figure that out. Purcell, same exact thing. It was the Archdiocese of Cincinnati that fired me. I always try to remind people that like these schools are good schools and they're full of open-minded people, but there's like a lot of things, there's one or two people that happen to be at the tippy top that ruin it for everybody. In this case, Archbishop Schnur and his director of HR, a guy named Bill Hancock, who's no longer there, who told me to my face in a meeting that he thanked God every night that he wasn't an alcoholic, a diabetic, or a gay. He said that to my face. He also told me to my face that my wife would think I was less of a man if I didn't suck it up and recant my statements. And my attorney had advised me, because he knows I'm a loud mouth. He's like, look, you have two ears and one mouth, so don't say anything to this guy. And so after 45 minutes of listening to this sort of psychobabble, when he got to the part about my wife, I simply stood up and said, okay, so I have to leave now. So they fired me. And it was funny because I started this blog post because I had this like Catholic school life and I had this public life. I was on the drop-in center board. I was going to City Hall to always talk about affordable housing. I had a nonprofit coffee shop on Elm Street. I was rehabbing buildings for affordable housing when 3CDC moved to town and everything was sort of starting. So I knew I wanted to go more that way. And so I started this blog on this MikeBrodsky.com site with an intention of running for public office eventually. It was my third blog post ever, and three people had read it.
And that was almost 6 years ago.
February 4th, they called me, and it was, six years ago right now, actually, that I wrote it.
Okay.
And so then it was like February 4th, they called me in. It was the 2 days after Obama got sworn in for his second term, because he talked about making marriage equality part of his platform. That's when it was. So anyway, it was funny because only a few people had read. Nobody cared what I had to say about much. And then this happened. And then to your point, all of a sudden everybody cared. And it was interesting because I never fancied myself like a marriage equality activist. I just was raised by people that told me to stand up to bullies. And so it happened. It ended up being a great thing. I'm very, very fortunate that it could end up being a great thing. I have no illusion about the fact that getting fired from a job could be a great career opportunity. That's not the same for the vast majority of people in America. And so I've tried to use that opportunity to do good stuff for folks and pass it along.
Did any change in the Archdiocese, the Catholic schools, come of what happened?
Yeah, they clamped down harder. So their contract was a page and a half when I was there. And I was told that I violated the morality clause, quote unquote. And when the superintendent came to Purcell Marion on February 4th and sat me down with the principal and told me this, he gave me a list of options. He said, you can sign all these documents that say you won't sue us, non-disparagement clause, all these sorts of things. And then I had to create a morality plan for myself. I had to create a plan for how I would be moral for myself or resign. And I looked at him, I said, I'm not gonna do either of those things. And it was quiet and uncomfortable. He's like, well, you have to. I'm like, but I'm not going to, because I knew I didn't violate the acceptable use policy of the internet, because I hadn't. And ironically, or strangely, I should say, or maybe not strangely, to this day, I have no written document that says what I was fired for. But what did happen was the Archdiocese contract is now 6 pages long. And they actually spell out what you can and can't do. So, for example, to work in the Archdiocese of Cincinnati, you cannot support surrogate motherhood.
Okay.
You can't support gay marriage, obviously. And there's a whole list of things that you
can't. These are specifically written.
They're very specific now.
But they weren't.
Correct. And for a time, I don't know if it still is, probably not, but for a time, it was lovingly referred to as the Morosky Clause.
To have a clause named after you is pretty
cool,
you want,
right?
That's what you want.
Yeah. Oh my God. So yeah, they clamped that. Yeah. So they clamped down.
Yeah. But you said it. I mean, it created this positive momentum for you and things that you've been able to do here. I mean, do you feel like would you be able to do a lot of? I mean, all that stuff I listed at the beginning. How much of that is at least partially part of the wave of momentum that you got from that?
So I think I'm going to start with a story and then back up real quick. I was on with Lincoln Ware while this was going on. and I was running for city council, and somebody called in and said that I was an opportunist, and I said, you're correct. I am, because I have been for 13 years raising $250,000 a year for fun to rehab buildings for affordable housing, serving as a liaison between the city, 3CDC, Homeless Coalition, different people on the drop-in center board to try to get to an equitable decision for the move of the drop-in center. At one point in my life, everybody hated me. All my friends hated me. I was doing this for free, building up like this momentum to try to make some kind of significant change. And so before I got fired, all the things that you're supposed to, again, quote unquote, get in Cincinnati, 40 under 40, Jefferson Warren, I was getting those as a teacher. And I knew I eventually wanted to move on, and then getting fired just simply sped it up. And so I told this caller, I was like, look, I've been working 7 days a week for 13 years for these causes I believe in, namely poverty alleviation, equity in education, things like this. And so now that people are paying attention, I'm absolutely using that opportunity to try to, I would be dumb not to. I've worked really hard. This is not at all what I wanted to have, and I just got married. Was not easy to hear. Mm-hmm. It was super surreal and super weird. My friends weren't allowed to talk to me at school. But I had been thinking about moving on. Do you reference Notre Dame? I was in a program at Notre Dame. I applied to this program. They take 30 people a cycle for a cohort. It's run out of their business school. It's a master's. I was an MBA in nonprofit and educational finance and administration. I was in that program for a reason. I mean, I was planning to move on. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, I guess, you know, they really helped. Because yep. They just sort of threw me out there.
Here you are, and you got elected to school board.
Yeah.
17. Yeah. It seems like so. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, 17. Yeah.
Well, it's 19, been, right? I've been on there a year. I just had my year anniversary.
Yeah.
Yeah, yesterday.
Yeah, it was November 17.
Yeah.
And a lot going on there.
A lot going on there. And now, you know, the Archdiocese or Dennis Schnur told me that I wasn't allowed to be around 400 students. Now I've got 37,000. So fantastic. And thank you, Dennis Schnur.
Yeah. And you spend time with students.
Yeah. I do. Every Monday and every Wednesday. Yeah. Monday, I mentor at Euler. I've done that for 5 years.
So you did that before you even got on the school board.
Right? Yeah. I teach writing. Writing and reading, try to help the third grade kids beat that stupid third grade test. Speaking for myself, not on behalf of the entire school board.
Yep.
And then Wednesdays, I'm a kindergarten classroom aide at Rothenburg, which is I just go and love kids and have fun and get snot on me.
Did you start doing that after you went on the board?
Yeah. Well, it was right before. It was right before.
But you know what's, I mean, you're not just on the board and sitting at the 50,000 foot view. You're going in there and you're seeing.
I think it's important
on a daily basis.
I try to. I sponsor the Student Voice Project. It's a board policy. Without belaboring the point, super long story, very short. The Student Voice Policy of Cincinnati Public School District creates a direct line from students to me and the governing body of the district. So Laura Mitchell, our superintendent, has like her little kitchen cabinet of kids. Otherwise, the student would have to go, you know, like a teacher or principal or this or this. But we have a group of students that will be fully formed by the end of January. It's super exciting. They'll have a direct line to me. And so when we're talking about things like what will be in the New Mercy High School or what would you think about school start times or what kind of safety features, for example, would you like to see around your school, we can get input from the students directly. I do think students, my friend Dunny Isaacson uses the term everyday experts. You know, we policy people like me make decisions all the time for people, but people that live it every single day are the experts. And so in our case, students, teachers, families, but definitely I think students.
In your year on the school board, there's been a lot happening. You know, the FC deal with the Stargell Stadium site, and then now with the pedestrian safety stuff. Can you talk about, let's talk about the pedestrian safety issue. It's a very hot button issue right now in city politics and school board politics, well, the city, in the city. What's going on? Can you just give us what's happened and what are some of the solutions that are being presented and what's happening.
Sure. It's been a pretty sad year. We've had a number of students struck by vehicles this year. One girl passed away.
This was in 2018.
Yeah. 2018-2019 school year, yes. Okay. But yeah, so 13 students struck. A number of them over in the Western Hills area. So Western Hills High School and Dater High School. And for folks who don't know, Dater High School is connected to Western Hills High School. It's behind it. And folks who are not familiar with that side of town, and Ferguson is a road that cuts in front of it, and it's where District 3 Police Station is right there, and people go pretty fast cutting from Glenway over to Work or Boudinot and Westwood. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like this vein that cuts from Price Hill to Westwood. And people go pretty fast, and so a number of the accidents have been there. And so we have been struggling with trying to get safety measures for our students around our high schools. There are a couple things happening that I think would be helpful for people to know that may not know. One of the things we do as a district that we're proud of is that we transport all our high school students who need transportation to school. And we do not have to legally by the state of Ohio. The state of Ohio does not require that school districts transport high school kids, but we do because we think it's important and we're in a large urban district and a lot of our high school kids need the transportation. So we contract with Metro buses. So Metro may not always drop off right by the school. And in the case of Dater or West High, that's part of the issue. And so you're dropped off further away. You have to walk to the crosswalk. I've talked to people on the sort of board, and it seems that the new director and the board are amenable to moving bus stops closer. That's a low cost way to drop the kids off closer to school. That's one thing. Another thing, and just to keep talking about Dana and West High real quick, is looking at, we don't control Metro's schedule. Our school, we have dedicated school routes, but other people can be on those buses. Something like Dater High School starting at 7:30, but the kids are dropped off 15 minutes ahead of time. Now, I don't totally remember being a teenager, but I do know that if I got dropped off with a little bit of time anywhere, I would use that time to make sure I was late to whatever I was supposed to be at. As opposed to, schools start at 7:30, you get dropped off at 7:29. So we've had those conversations. And there's the issue of crosswalks and crossing guards that people have been hearing about in the news, I think, where the school district made it pretty clear to the city that we wanted them to help shoulder the cost of our crossing guards. We don't have crossing guards at all of our schools. And again, similar to the transportation, we're not required to have crossing guards at high schools. Since we're in an urban district, and if you think about our high schools, think off the top of your head, Hughes, Taft, Clark, Walt. These are all on main roads. Mm-hmm. And so you're crossing roads that people are flying on. So trying to get more crossing guards to be able to have them at high schools, we think would help too. I'll speak for myself. I know that if I'm going through a school zone, and I've tried to be more mindful since I've been on the school board, since it's been happening on my own driving, because I don't like pointing fingers and saying point at me, so I'll point at me real quick. I don't always pay attention when I'm driving, and I know Jason, at least you were friends on Facebook, you might have seen for 2019, I'm trying to be more intentional about that. My phone turns off now when I get my car, so I can't look at it. I tell myself I don't look at my phone when I'm driving, but it's not true, if I were to be honest with myself.
Yeah.
But if there is a human in the road, sorry, my point is, if there is a human in a road with a sign that says stop, a construction, you notice it more than the little reflector. So we're trying to get more crossing guards. I'm confident we can work with the city to do it. Things might have gotten a little contentious there for a minute. I think there was a lot of heated folks. I've been really happy with what's been happening since. So we've got more lighting over at West High now.
The city now currently funds the crossing guards, or they do not?
They do not.
And what you're trying to do is get them to do that.
Correct. And they did up until 10 years ago. And I was on a school where I can't speak for how this decision was made. But the decision, whoever was in charge then on our end, elected to start shouldering the cost. Of note, I don't want to get too deep in the weeds, but this is also a term people are familiar with because of last year's FC Cincinnati, this 1999 agreement piece, which largely deals with tax abatements. The crossing guard issue is also part of the 1999 agreement issue, because in that agreement that the city made with the district in 1999, the city agreed to provide crossing guards at all of our schools.
And then didn't follow through on that promise.
Well, they did. The problem is, and it all goes back again, you know, and I try to play devil's advocate myself, and I'm not always good at it. You all know that, but I do try. The school board in 1999 signed a document that says very clearly that if the city ever fell on like hard financial times and had to stop paying the crossing guards or the school nurses, that the school board of the city of Cincinnati would have no legal recourse in that matter. And they signed it. So we're stuck with it. And so when we sent a letter to then acting city manager Patrick Dehaney in the beginning of the summer and said, hey, look, we want y'all, when the contract is up in December 31, we want y'all to start paying these people again. He sent us a letter at the end of the summer, a few months later, saying, no way, Jose. We waited another few months and then sent the letter that was pretty harshly worded. Admittedly, it was, but and you don't always like to do it, but I think the conversation got going and we're having it, and I feel like we're kind of all working together now. And this year, it's 2019. The 1999 agreement was 20 years long, so we're also now in a position to renegotiate the 99 agreement going forward.
So back to pedestrian safety. We've had 13 kids struck by cars. How many deaths have we had?
One
death. A real issue. Mm-hmm. A real issue. Succinctly, whose issue is this? Is it the school? Is it the transportation department of the city? Is it the police? Is it all of the above that needs to be working on this?
I personally believe that it's everybody's issue, because we're talking about kids, and adults are getting hit too. I mean, I'm thinking through the lens of kids, and I feel like it's all of our issue. And so you have streets that are not pedestrian friendly. Mm-hmm. You have a school district, again speaking for myself, that could maybe look at some low cost creative ways, like figuring out when the bus is dropping kids off, for example. And then police with enforcement. But enforcement, Derek Bauman has the best analogy. And for folks who don't know him, Derek is a pretty staunch transportation activist in Southwest Ohio. And I think Derek's analogy works well. And his analogy of enforcement is, it's kind of like a hose. You put a kink in it. Mm-hmm. And as soon as the kink's out, right, the flow goes back to normal. You need enforcement. I think that helps. If people get I started paying my meter more. A number of years ago, when I started getting tickets every time it was like a second late,
yep.
I got that app on my phone, and when I'm going to be in the middle of a meeting, I got it. So it does, yep. Enforcement's part of it. The city, I think, needs to have a real come to Jesus with their streets. And then we can, again, I think we can look at some low cost, effective things. And also, I'm a huge advocate for later school start times, which, while it's more for like brain functioning, also would impact this issue, I believe. So it wouldn't be dark. I mean, kids are getting to school at 6:30 in the morning, 7 in the morning. It's bananas.
Yeah, it is.
So I think that's part of it, too. I think it's all of us.
Would you use a different term if we weren't on being recorded right now?
Bananas?
Yeah.
I have gotten really good at using curse words.
Curse word replacements.
When I get excited, Jason knows, I get excited about issues. I can sometimes curse, but it's only because I'm excited. Not because I'm a...
You're very passionate.
I'm very passionate, and I can...
I think you're raising I think you are raising the profile of the school board, not just... I think Ryan Messer's done a good job with that as well. You're really out there on social media, whereas, you know, the school board, I think, really just are people who just stick their nose down, and you didn't hear much from, from a public standpoint. Now we are, and now... You know, when was the last time we saw school board members going to City Hall and saying, doggone it, like, we need your help on this, and we need you to step up, and we're not going to be quiet until we get some help here?
Yeah.
But you don't see that very much.
No, and if you did, it was quieter. And I think, and I appreciate that very much. I do, you know, Ryan and I definitely try to keep people in the know, and what's been really neat about the past year of school board is every one of us has had this kind of commitment to community engagement. We created a community engagement committee, and everyone is amenable to it. It took us some time to fire on all cylinders, I think, But the other strength we have, I believe, as a body, is all seven of us have a pretty broad reach into the community, because all seven of us have different masters, for lack of a better term, in my opinion. You look at some governing bodies, and I'll also look at city council, the commissioner, whatever. I'm not picking on anybody, but a lot of them may have, they may have nine people, but three different sets of masters. And by math, constituents, fans, voters, et cetera, us donors. us seven cover a broad base. And that brings
a very diverse board.
It's a very diverse board with a very diverse background, from business to education, and so to politics, to community development, with board member Davis, Ozzy Davis. Carolyn Jones is going to retire in 2 weeks from 28 years at Hamilton County Mental Health Services. You have mental health. You have, so you have professional, pretty well-connected board politically.
Yep.
And again, the reach in the community is strong. So I think all of those things combined, we've been able to do some cool things for kids. We're opening new schools. We're buying up properties.
You got a new school coming to the west side, right?
We do. And Mercy High School merged with Macaulay, which is Katie Murawski's alma mater. I married a good German Catholic girl.
Macaulay or Mercy?
Huh?
Which ones are all?
Mercy Macaulay. They're Mercy.
No, which ones are all?
We bought Mercy. She went to Macaulay.
Okay.
So Katie went to Macaulay, and Macaulay and Mercy have combined. We bought Mercy High School in Westwood. It's a lovely, lovely school.
Murawski's bought it, or CPS
also bought it. CPS bought it. And so we are going to be opening, a new Westwood campus is what we're calling it now. We don't have a name for it yet. This Saturday, for those who care, I don't know when this will air, but this Saturday,
Wednesday morning,
cool. This Saturday, which is January
12th.
We're all checking our phones. January 12th. We have a 5.5-hour public meeting at the Education Center, 2651 Burnett. We're gonna at 9 a.m. kick off the meeting by talking about the Mercy.
Will this be a high school or a elementary?
I don't know.
We don't know yet.
So we did. We contracted with Community Building Institute at Xavier University to do some community engagement. I went to Western Hills High School and met with students there to see what they thought made a school great. Not necessarily with them, but what makes a school great. What do you like about Western Hills High School? To try to get info like that. So there's a bunch of different options. I think folks who are familiar with that building just kind of see it as a high school and think of it like a high school. But then if you look at the west side of town, the needs of the district, grade schools, you listen to parent.
Could that come in 1920 school years?
It'll be open in the fall.
This fall?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a real need for grade school. You listen to certain groups of parents, and Montessori is what's needed. You look at like Dater Montessori on the west side, 300 kids on the waiting list.
Oh, wow.
So there's any, or something new. Or something new to be ahead of the curve, which CPS, if I can brag just for a sec, PSA for CPS, we've always kind of been. We had the nation's first and second public Montessori high school, the nation's only accredited Montessori high schools, the nation's only Montessori neighborhood public school, the only K-12 performing arts school in the country. I mean, we've always kind of tried to be there. You look at the State Board of Education's latest strategic plan that got published last year. If you read it and you know anything about Cincinnati Public School District, you'll be like, this sounds like Cincinnati Public School District, because board member Eve Bolton and Melanie Bates, who've been around, a lot of institutional knowledge, were a big part of it. So it could be something new, grade school, high school, both. There's a lot of options. The sky's the limit. But what we're really mindful of, it's an interesting opportunity, because you've got a school that's got a real long legacy, and that's important too in any city, especially in this city, who takes its schools very seriously. And having come from the Catholic system, I know how those roots can run. And so that's something you do have to be mindful of. Now, at the same time, I've talked to my Westwood friends whose daughters went to that school and who are very passionate about it, that they need to understand too that when we're making a decision, it's not just for Westwood, it's for the whole district. But I think you can do both, and we're trying to be very mindful and deliberate about how to do that. We're never going to please everybody, but just so people know, that's definitely at the forefront. It's not like, well, it's ours now. Sorry, Westwood. We want it to still be something Westwood can be very proud of. Westwood already has 3 CPS schools, Midway, Gamble, and Westwood. Now they're going to have four. And Shiviot's right down the road.
Yeah. So. Well, I can say I would like you to keep rabble-rousing because it's entertaining for us.
Okay.
This is the segment where I have one more question.
Oh, yeah. Gives Jason real quick to write about.
We have to keep him employed.
Real quick. Can we see you run for council in 21? That's your answer. Great.
Yeah, Paul? That's a yes, right? Okay. So we'll put that down as a yes.
Oh, man.
We've committed you to a council run.
Tell your dad I said hi.
I will. I absolutely will.
Mike, thank you so much for coming on the show. Keep rabble-rousing and all that. Yeah, man. Maybe we'll have you back again sometime. When that council run comes, we'll have you back for sure.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Right. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
All right, much thanks to Mike for joining us. Really awesome to have him. You know, I find maybe the most interesting thing about his story that I certainly didn't know was how much of the background work he was doing on his own time while he was at Mueller, while he was at Purcell, of, you know, whether with the drop-in center and all that stuff that he was already doing, putting in his own time doing that. And then obviously everything happens at Purcell and he's now kind of really come front and center in the community. But like that's really wild how much time, effort, energy he put into that before that was ever even what he was really doing.
I'll tell you what, Mike is one of those people in Cincinnati, you wish you had 30 or 40 of them. He's incredibly passionate. He genuinely has a great heart and is out there working hard to make this a better place and fight poverty. And he's been doing that long before he came on the school board. And it'll be interesting to see where he goes. I know we asked him about city council and he laughed about that. And I would expect him to do that. But, I think you'll see him run for council in again in 2021.
Yeah,
I like Mike. By the way, that's his campaign slogan. I like Mike, and I do like Mike.
Yeah, sure. Why not? I like that he came. I like that he came on the podcast. I very much appreciate
that too.
Yeah, many more guests coming this year. Really excited of having some more guests coming in from the outside. Well, of course, we're going to continue to have a regular run of reporters from in here. We would never take those people away from you. By the way, the Polly Campbell episode, fire. Yeah. People were loving Polly Campbell. If you haven't heard it, she basically talked to some about her favorite new restaurants of 2018. So if you're looking to go out and go out to eat at any point in time in the future, you can go back and listen to that episode with Polly Campbell, which is two episodes ago.
Polly also was gracious to field my questions about eating just a regular bowl of chili at Skyline and also what is her take on Bob Evans.
Yeah.
Also, I forgot to tell you this, Paul.
quite a bit of Twitter stir came from you bringing that back up, by the way.
I kind of got some people adding you.
Yeah, I know. I don't appreciate that.
Oh, are you mad?
I got enough anger in my mentions, Jason. I don't need you. People accusing me of not liking, not just anybody accusing me, P.G. Sittenfeld accusing me of not liking Skyline because you added me inside of one of your ridiculous, I eat just a straight bowl of chili tweets. I was like, obviously, I love Skyline. That's why I'm so personally offended by this take.
See, people took that as like that you didn't like Skyline. And maybe I didn't clarify this well enough. I was just talking about the bowl of Skyline.
Yeah, I know what you were talking about, but it really, really splattered all over me.
Oh, sorry. Before we go on, better you than me. Before we move on, I want to point this out that I took Polly up on. She had a great suggestion about McDonald's, and that's where you buy.
Well, you don't go there.
No, where you buy a vanilla shake and you buy a cup of black coffee and you mix the two together. I did that last week.
How'd that go?
It's fantastic.
Really?
It's fantastic.
All right.
Thank you, Polly.
Well, I'm taking up Polly on a recommendation that she gave to me to go to 8th and English over in like kind of the O'Brienville area.
That's too hoity-polloity for me.
She recommended it, so I'm going there on Friday. Okay. So I got that coming my way. I'll give you the review next week. I know people are on pins and needles about that. Yeah. All right, time for my That's So Cincinnati.
Dun, dun, dun. Moment of the week.
Which, by the way, I really think in 20...
Baby, if you ever wonder.
Sorry, go ahead. I really feel like in 2019... you should occasionally have a That's a Cincinnati moment of the week. I'm happy to keep coming up with them.
Moment of the week.
We could do that. I have no problem with that. But you know, like, feel free to contribute to this segment on occasion. You know,
my life is a So Cincinnati moment.
No, it's not.
Oh. Yeah, it's not. all right, go.
All right. Here's the thing. My That's a Cincinnati moment is Sheree Puello and Mike Dardis announcing that they're getting married. They're engaged. They are the two anchors of Channel 5. And it's not that that happened. It is that our city is gone bonkers over this story. They love it. What is it about us as a people that we love stories about our news anchors and we like admire and have this obsession over them so much? I have not seen numbers like our readership on the Sharif Lowe Mike Dardis story in a long time. Why are we obsessive about what is it? Is it just the small town, big, like the, you know, the smallest big city type thing? Is that what it is?
The one thing I've noticed, and having not, as our listeners know, I'm not from here originally. I'm from small town in Appalachia and part of Ohio. And one thing that's always amazing about Cincinnati is like, it just seems so starstruck. And I've never really, it's like, really, it's just people, man, you know?
I don't know, I just
maybe that's my own personal feeling. Like, I've never been enamored by celebrity.
I remember growing up here and like really admiring the local sports guys because, you know, I was a big sports nerd or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, like Brad Johansson showed up at a Mueller football game, you know, doing as they did when he was the sports guy at Channel 12. I remember I was my whole shtick at the time I had a Waffle House hat that I wore that was like my signature in the student section. I was in high school. Give me a break.
Okay.
And I loved Waffle House. Still do to this day, by the way. That's a whole separate segment. But I had him sign my Waffle House hat. So I had a Brad Johansson signed Waffle House hat, which I reminded him of. I might somewhere in a box. I reminded him of, I did like an internship. And I became friends with Brad. I played basketball with him. And obviously once I became sort of in the same circle here, we were at a lot of same places. And it was hysterical. And the same thing when I went to Channel 5 and I did an internship over there when I was in college. It was like, oh, I love George Vogel. And I was like, oh, now I know George. Yeah.
You asked the question about why are we so enamored. I think you just answered
with your
Waffle House autographed hat by Brad Johansson, who's not here anymore. He's in Raleigh now.
He is in Raleigh now.
We miss him. I like Brad's a great guy.
Yeah, well, big fan of Brad.
And you know, I'm a big fan of George. Big fan of DJ Dennis Jansen.
Dennis Jansen showed up, by the way, at the Bengals and Marvin Lewis parting ways press conference. Came out of retirement just to show up.
He shows up
for like the huge event. How about this? This will be a nugget one day. Is that DJ asked the final question to Marvin Lewis as Cincinnati Bengals head coach?
What was the question?
Showed up out of retirement and even was able to fire the last question off.
Was he wearing loafers with tassels on?
I don't remember if he had tassels on or not.
I saw
him there. Then I saw him at the Marymount Theater 2 days later. I was like, man, two DJs in 1 week.
Enjoying retirement. Dude, I guess he must be bored in retirement, though, if he's showing up at Marvin Lewis press conference.
Yeah, I mean, hey, maybe he just wanted to pay his respects.
Yeah, Martin Lewis, right, yeah. Shout out Josh Sneed and Cincy shirts.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, they're all over that. All right.
Did you say you had a curmudgeon moment?
Yeah, I do. It's kind of an embarrassing moment, but...
Is this going to be like being called Grandpa McDonald's? Because I still love that. By the way, you used the phrase fat cats on Twitter the other day. Corporate fat cats.
I mean, what's wrong? Like, I've used that in stories before. I used that when I used to cover transportation and I was writing about the airport board. Like, these guys lived high on the hog, man. So I used that phrase in the car in the stories back then. I called them fat cats.
That feels like something you would say about Michael Douglas in like an 80s financial thriller.
Financial thriller.
Yeah.
Yeah. My curmudgeon moment of the week
is fat cats.
Meow, meow, meow.
What's that?
Go ahead. So Sunday night, you know, I usually, I don't know, go out on the weekends and fill up my tank. I realize like, I need to get gas for the weekend. So it's like 10:30 and I'm just sitting there on my couch and I've got my house shoes on or slippers, whatever you prefer to call them.
I think slippers is good.
Slippers. And I just get up, grab my keys, and walk out. And I realize, like, I'm kind of in my car driving, and I'm like, oh, I have my house shoes on. And then I go to UDF and get out and pump my gas. And I'm like, Yeah, I've become that guy who, or that person who wears their house shoes out in public. Oof.
I like it. I like you just standing there in your slippers pumping gas. You should have gone in and got a milkshake.
I should have, or I should have just gone to Walmart and topped the whole evening off, and then that would make for an even better story here.
You'd have been one of the classiest dressed people in Walmart, though. You see a lot worse than slippers in Walmart.
Yeah, yeah,
let's be honest. You really do.
Well, I think we're about done.
Yeah. We can wrap up. Anyway, want to remind everybody we're back. So we're officially back now on our weekly run. As 29, the holidays are over.
You know what being back means, don't you?
Every Wednesday morning,
top hand,
Paul and Jason in your ear,
my singing.
Ugh, it's really the worst thing that happens on this podcast.
Shout out to Phil. P. Diddy Diddy'n.
That's right. Producer extraordinaire on the ones and twos right now, mixing it up and Everett for making us sound so good.
Yep.
We sound good in 2019.
Our new guy, I'm working on him. I'm going to try to talk him into getting Cyndi Lauper. Maybe a little Girls Just Want to Have Fun as our intro. And
why would you do
music.
That? What? That doesn't even make sense.
Just to annoy you.
It does annoy me. Most things that
you know,
annoy me.
Earl would love it. He loves the 80s stuff.
Yeah, Burl's a big Cyndi Lauper fan, I heard.
Richard Marx, Tina Turner.
Yeah, all right. Every Wednesday morning, That's What Cincinnati is here. We're going to continue. More guests are coming in the future. We got a whole list that we're going to start going through as we go forward. So keep an eye out for that. Excited about all that. So anyway, hopefully we will talk to you next week. If you come back and keep listening, tell your friends, subscribe, rate us.
iTunes, baby.
On iTunes, yeah. Give us those reviews. It helps us build up the profile.
Stars.
Absolutely. We need that. So anyway, thanks everybody for listening. That's the Cincinnati. We'll talk to you next week.
Cue the Cyndi Lauper.